are now about to witness the strength of geek knowledge.
I geek out about TV shows. I geek out about music. Star Wars, of course. Fantasy stuff, Lord of the Rings. Star Wars, of course. God geek.
It's God Geeks, and we're back, and we apologize for the delay, but it's worth the wait. You're going to love this episode. We're going to get into some crazy creedal Christianity stuff in Jedi Mind Tricks, and we're going to get really geeky about a show on Netflix called The OA.
And
we're
some eighth grade literature.
And some incredible classic Pulitzer Prize winning literature in To Kill a Mockingbird. So this is it. You have come to the right place.
I don't believe it.
That is why you fail. You must unlearn what you have learned.
It is Jedi Mind Tricks. You know the section of the show where we get into some theological geekiness and, so this week, we actually made a promise 2 weeks ago that we would get into the Nicene Creed next week, and then we missed
life
it.
Life happened.
Yeah, James is juggling babies at this point. Yeah. Actually, it's one-handed juggling. There's two babies. So,
yeah.
If you have another one, it'll like actually officially be juggling. Yeah. But
I don't think that conversation has started yet.
Let's hold off on that.
Let's
off on that and get into some theology. So what we talked about discussing more was the Nicene Creed.
Yeah.
But we'll zoom out from the Nicene Creed and kind of
give it some context.
Say let's talk for a minute about maybe what was life like for these early Christians. And when I say early Christians, so if we said that the Council of Nicaea, which is where the Nicene Creed comes from, but let's even zoom out even more for a second. So what would you say would be a good way of describing what a creed is? When I say a creed, what would you say? What would your best?
Yeah, it's an expression of belief. It's kind of a here's where we stand. I think a lot of times they come out of controversy where a question has to be answered.
All right, yeah.
And here's the answer. Here's what we believe. This is the thing. We're not backing on these particular things. We're not backing down.
Yeah, I think that's a good good explanation of what they are. And I would only add to that that I've heard them referred to, and this was a powerful. It's like a sign or a symbol.
Oh yeah,
to know to identify the church.
Yeah.
So almost like.
Okay, so you say you're one of us.
What's the password?
Yeah.
You know,
do you
like
believe this?
You know, like the old you know, who goes there?
Yeah.
Well, this is what I, and so it's sort of. An identifier, a sign or a symbol to be able to say, this is what we are, as opposed to all these other people who are teaching other things.
Because there would have
things.
Been a lot of splinter groups, if you will, early church, that were saying some things that they were very different than what other groups were saying.
Right. And so
other gospels even.
And so a creed was used as a, like you said, as a summary of of the faith, but I think also it's one of these noticeable signs now that the church is gathering in different places that this this is what these people
So
this
my
consistent
understanding
with
was
where we're coming from. It's an early version of a confession, is it not?
Totally.
So it's a common confession for the ancient early church. And when I say early church, I mean, let's just say those first 300 years before Constantine.
Second and third century.
Yeah. Takes power of Rome, and with Constantine, oddly enough, he has his men paint a cross on their shields, mm-hmm. and then he has a victory in taking power in Rome, mm-hmm. and sees that as a sign from God that yep. this Christianity thing is okay.
Yep.
And at the time, I think it's fair to say he just saw it as one of many gods.
Yes.
And that to have this God's favor was a good thing. And so let's let it be lawful now. In
because before this, it was illegal to be a Christian.
Yeah, unlawful. And
pain of death many times.
And so for those early Christians, yeah. Before it was, and there were periods of time, to be fair, there were periods of time where the punishment for practicing Christianity mm-hmm. was relaxed
yes.
by whoever yeah. it was that was in power.
Yeah.
But it never became lawful.
Especially
right.
for a citizen of Rome.
Right, because Rome at that time saw the pagan religions as intricate and married to the state. So if you
oh,
rejected
yeah.
the pagan gods,
yeah.
then you were rejecting Caesar, you know?
Yeah.
And Caesar was seen as a god, you know?
The economy was wrapped around the temple and
yeah,
temples,
yeah.
I should say.
Yeah,
in
so
many
it
ways.
Was a very intricate.
Yeah. I've been to Temple Artemis. I mean, that was
very,
all it was.
Yeah, so
yeah.
We're not experts on any of this,
no.
but we're able to sort of get into the nitty gritty of it. But there was an atmosphere of real danger to be a Christian. And
yeah.
there was no real benefit at all politically or financially to being associated with Christians.
Right.
Until Constantine took power
yeah.
And began to favor the church.
Yes.
And actually he is involved in as the information that we have goes, he is involved in a kind of a major way in how the Nicene Creed is formed, because at the time we had talked about Arianism
mm-hmm.
had taken hold of major leaders in the church embraced what's called Arianism, which essentially is saying that Jesus the Son was a man and he was not also
right.
God.
Right.
So he is a creature.
Right.
Not creator.
Right.
And so you have at this Council of Nicaea this big dispute within the church, and part of the solution and part of, according to some historians, what Constantine himself with advisors contributed to the Nicene Creed was of one substance with the Father.
Yeah.
So that
was not
so
created.
So the language there is this first proclamation, and I'm not saying Constantine came up with it. Obviously it's biblical, but
yeah.
he contributed the word that means of one substance. And so it's fascinating to me that you have the church historically needing to gather together and settle these disputes, and what comes out of it is a sign or a symbol to sort
yeah.
of, or a confession, if you will,
yeah.
that says this is what we're about. Now,
yeah.
now I want to hear you talk about, I heard you say something the other day that sort of... I loved to hear, because you were saying something along the lines of there's a creedal, if you will,
yeah.
a way to understand scripture, or
yeah.
a way to understand our overarching narrative of our framework of meaning for life.
Yeah.
And so talk about what you were saying the
sure,
other day.
Sure, yeah, we've been talking about this in my current seminary class, and it's kind of been one of these mind blown moments where it just made a lot of things clearer. So what we've been talking about is a creedal framework. So creedal being of the creeds, kind of in the style of the creeds, framework being a way to frame your view on everything. So we're talking about it in more of a narrative creedal framework even. So the creeds very succinctly and clearly describe the narrative of the Bible, the big meta narrative of the Bible, which all those other things fit into. A lot of our other theological concepts fit into law and gospel, and we've talked about two kingdoms and some other things. Those things fit very well within the creedal framework, specifically the Apostles' Creed and the Nicene Creed. Apostles' Creed, very easily you can see the narrative in. You get the first, second, and third articles that also represent the Trinity, of course.
And that's very much the same as the Nicene
Same
Creed.
As the Nicene, too. And you've also got chronological beginning, middle, and end.
So you have a description, and I want you to hear you talk a little bit more about that.
Uh-huh.
So you have a description of who God is and who we are.
Yeah, totally.
So when you say creedal framework, do you mean, so first article, really talking about God as creator?
Correct, yeah.
The second article really talking about, and also I would say too, referred to as Father.
Father, yeah.
Father and creator.
Father, creator,
yep. Although there's some Bible verses that talk about the
John
Son
1.
As creator,
totally.
And Colossians, but so
which
you have
fits
this,
within a creedal framework.
Yeah, right. So you have the second article. Then you have the God
Christ.
As Redeemer,
Redeemer, yep,
and as Son,
yep,
and then the third article you have God
Holy
as
Spirit.
Sanctifier, or the which means holy, making holy, and Spirit. So it's more than we originally said. As it's more than simply a sign, it's more
it's
than
a, it's a description,
simply
it's
a confession. It's also a story.
Yeah,
and so you can look at it as and I would add to that. Here's a whole nother layer.
Okay,
it's a gospel proclamation.
Oh, it
too.
Totally is. Yeah,
as in fulfillment of the law.
Yeah.
It
doesn't leave anything hanging.
It's not do this. It's this is who God is, and
this is what He's done, and
this is
what
He's
will
doing.
Do.
Yeah,
and is
He's created everything. He has redeemed everything through Christ, and He is causing the church to be formed. He's causing the gospel to be preached. He's causing people to believe.
Right.
He's gathering a people for Himself. Yeah. So there you have a story of creation, fall, redemption.
I had fun the other
resurrection
day.
And the forming of the church and the promise of restoration
of
and
all so, things
of all things.
And that was this past Wednesday. I got to do a chapel for our middle school, and for a while, I was like, how am I going to frame this? How am I going to frame this? And creedal framework. And all I did was, let's talk first article, creation, fall, everything's in there. Second article, redemption. Third article, sanctification.
Restoration.
Yeah. And what was cool was we talked about the fullness of the gospel. If you're working within a creedal framework, the gospel is not just about you personally.
Or your sins being forgiven.
Or just your sins
forgiven. Or you as a human.
Right.
But it's
all things.
It absolutely
redeemed.
Does include sins being
and
forgiven.
And that includes
and that. Absolutely does include you. And
but
it,
it's so
and,
much bigger than that.
But it is. It's all, it's the recreation, the restoration of all things, because we start with creation. We
all of creation, not just
creator
you.
God
created you.
Right.
Created everything.
Yeah. So the gospel is huge.
Yeah.
And the creed really gives us a beautiful cliff notes.
Sure,
that's
yeah, totally.
One.
But
cliff
that's
notes
totally
version
it,
of,
it works
of here's the big story. This is what we believe as Christians. Yeah. And so, yes, it's a sign. Yes, it's a confession. Yes, it's a story. And then here's the other thing. And yes, it's gospel.
Yeah.
Here's the other beautiful thing that it is. Yeah. It's a perfect and beautiful template for prayer.
Totally.
For when you're called upon to pray, when you're in your car praying by yourself, or someone says to you, "Will you pray at dinner?" Or where you
think
or
first
you,
article, second article, third article.
If you think about the creed, you will have a very powerful prayer template there to say,
well,
God as Father,
and the Lord's prayer is
thank you for your Son,
too.
How you've redeemed us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is. Yeah, obviously
they go hand in hand.
You can't beat the Lord's Prayer.
No, you can't beat it.
But there are elements of the Lord's Prayer also
in the creed. Totally.
So it's a beautiful framework for understanding the faith in general. And what is a wonderful thing about that is it's historical.
Yeah.
We look back and we see this aspect of it, how what we would say as Lutherans is too, it's the Word of God.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quoting the Bible, mm-hm. but
it's in alignment
it is
with,
saying what the yeah. Bible is saying, yeah. right? It's so it is the word. It is the word. It's not quoted yeah. from the scriptures, but it is the word of God
right.
because it's a proclamation of what the early church heard and saw and touched and tasted and felt in Jesus Christ, the mm-hmm. living God, as he was resurrected from the dead and as he will return and make all things new.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a Jedi mind trick, man, wrestling with the creed and some beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
And we'll continue to get into more of this good historical, crazy theological stuff next week, and we will. We really will. We're going to...
Forget that new baby. I'm here next week.
Yeah. If you hear a baby crying in the next episode, you'll know why. Because
or if I'm calling in from home.
We're
that
so
might
committed.
Happen.
We're so committed to keeping these pumping out. But we will we'll wrestle with some more stuff on that next week. And now it's time for This Week in Geek.
Yeah.
C-3PO has got to be the real nerd.
It's against my programming to impersonate a deity.
Darth Vader was a cool character too, although he was the evil one.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
All right, This Week in Geek.
Geekiness.
We told you 2 weeks ago that we were going to talk about the OA. So, you know, spoiler alert, of course, if you haven't finished the OA.
You've had plenty of time.
Yeah, so get over it.
Yeah.
We're going to talk OA.
Yeah.
So, let's talk OA. My takeaway from the show is I loved it, absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
And it sounds like maybe there'll be a second season, which I hope, because it left on a bit of a cliffhanger in my eyes. But what'd you think of the show? First impressions, last impressions?
I love the show. It's a heavy show.
Yeah.
It's to me, one of the things that I liked most about it is I never really knew where it was taking me, after the first couple of twists and turns, I was always so intrigued by the end of an episode mm-hmm. that I wanted to watch the next one. And so I really like that style of show, especially now with Netflix, where, the reward is one click away rather than 1 week away.
If I had to wait a week between each episode, it would have been pretty stressful.
It's a totally different kind of, entertainment.
Yeah.
Than something like, a cliffhanger like Lost when it was on TV,
right.
Having to wait a week.
Yeah. And it was all about that wait and people talking about it.
And
Westworld a little bit.
They played
like
into that, but, actually, the way that I watched Lost was one after another because I didn't even watch the show until after it already
came out
on DVD back in the DVD days. But but anyway.
So this had some Lost moments, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's about, oddly enough, angels.
Yeah.
And dimensions, which I'm into.
Yep.
And afterlife.
Yeah.
And
it reminded me a little bit of The Leftovers at times.
There was a very Leftover style. If you like, I would say
tone
this.
And style,
if you followed us in our journey with The Leftovers, which
just
by the way,
back soon.
Yeah, there's a trailer out for it now.
Oh, yeah.
They're
in Australia now.
Yeah, the end is near. Which is true.
Still.
The OA. The OA does a really good job of. Weaving all that, the idea of a show about angels and all,
uh-huh.
it you don't realize that's what it is until what, 6-7 episodes in.
Yeah, and there are hints, and I sent you a picture of one hint.
You know something weird and supernatural is going on.
Yeah,
but you don't know that it's really that. Well, and you really don't know if she's an angel or not even at the last episode.
She is not a reliable narrator. And
that's beautiful
literature term.
Yeah, right.
And that's what the big question is for next season is she a reliable narrator?
Is she crazy
Did she come up with all of it? Is she crazy
something happened that
but they've built in things like, well, what if it's your subconscious telling you
they've
things
built in enough
that
to
you
make
see
it
things that you wouldn't
and
see
and that's what I think
and I want to go back and look. I wonder if there's hints in the background of a shooter.
Yeah,
I wonder if it's there somewhere.
Yeah, obviously there's a lot of unhealthy theological things.
Oh, very unhealthy.
It.
Same thing with Leftovers.
But then some other healthy stuff. I think part of a show like this is that you don't believe the show as a, like you said, a reliable source of information about angels.
Right.
You are you're just surrendering to, okay, yeah, this isn't real and I'm just going to go on the, yeah, on the trip.
Yeah.
What did you, I'm interested to hear you talk about the name of the show.
The OA. So I'm pretty sure it's the original angel, like OG, original gangster.
Okay. The original angel, but I'm going to say, do you think there's anything else to it?
I think there could be.
Here's what's interesting to me.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if this is what they're going for, but I felt like there were strong hints at
Alpha
this.
Alpha Omega reversed. I don't know.
I'd never thought about that. The Alpha Omega reversed. That's interesting. So she might be Satan. the way that they say it, away,
away,
A W A Y, away, the away, the away. So they
go
say
away.
The away. Yeah, yeah. And there's away. There if you hear the away,
mm-hmm,
when you watch the show with that in mind, there's sometimes where they say the away where they're talking about, because they're really talking about
getting away.
Yeah. They're talking about an escapism. Escape. There's a lot of a sort of a Gnostic sort of
yeah,
reality.
Oh, that's the other thing.
I
had a whole bunch of readings on this week.
Well, okay. Well, so let's go over real quick. What Gnosticism is.
Gnosticism would hold to the tenet that the material world is fractured, broken.
Bad.
Bad. Through various reasons.
And spiritual things are.
Spiritual things are good. So you need to transcend the bad, the physical.
The away.
The go away.
Yeah, you know.
And
so,
that's what, if, and,
Gnostic,
and death is
and Gnostic,
ultimately spiritual being ripped from material.
Yes, and Gnostic means
secret
knowledge.
Knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah. So
the
way
secret
that
movements
you,
are
yes,
the knowledge.
So there's a,
it's such a Gnostic show.
It
I
really
got my
is.
Paper this week then. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's well, there's a lot of Gnosticism in there, as there is like in something like The Matrix.
Yeah.
In knowing, okay, this secret knowledge that we have,
we'll
this will make
free.
The this will set us free and we'll go away.
Well, and the Gnostics see Christ as not,
so there's
not
where
a
I,
redeemer.
Do you see where I'm coming from with the OA?
I go
OA. The
OA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's the
OA.
Redemption is not creation being redeemed, it's leaving creation.
Right. According yeah. to Gnostics.
According to Gnostics.
Yeah. So
and that would fit into this show.
So Christianity, we have a drastically
totally different
stance in saying that all things that are spiritual are not good things, and
right.
all things that are physical
right.
are not bad things.
Right.
That the spiritual and the physical are very much intertwined,
yep.
and that we're physical beings and that our physical spiritual reality is married together, and the most
yeah.
unnatural thing is for those to be separated
yeah.
At death.
So I've heard one thing described: animals are 100% physical, no spiritual really involved. Angels are spiritual, essentially. In the middle, though, is man, both, 100% both. And so, yeah, and death would be us ripped apart.
I don't know if I would agree with any of that.
No,
but
I've heard that. I heard that said the other
yeah.
the other day.
Well, there
could
are,
be totally off.
Well, I don't think that angels are not material beings
because they can take material form.
Well, they are mistaken for men.
Yeah, exactly.
So
that doesn't hold up then.
It doesn't, and they actually slaughter an entire town. So how could
if they're just spiritual? That
yeah.
Wouldn't
so they actually
yeah.
they picked up some sort of objects and burned
yeah.
and killed and so I you know and I don't know.
So that would be a more Gnostic concept that angels are when you you ascend you become a fully spiritual angel.
Yeah, and I don't want to. I mean, I don't know that. I'm not saying that animals are beings on the level of humans. And I'm not
but
even
to
saying
take them away completely.
Well,
from,
to take them completely out
yeah,
of
okay.
a spiritual realm is the same thing to kind of say. What I would say is, everything is spiritual, and everything is also tangible.
That seems more in line with
and including. Including Christ. I mean, he is
oh, yeah.
he is incarnate now in a dimension
yeah.
away from here.
So this is stuff away, the creed,
no,
going back to Jedi mind tricks, this is stuff the creeds were also taking a stance on
against,
too and fighting
yeah,
against.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The idea that spiritual is good and physical is bad.
And
well,
we still got it today. It's
well, if 2,000
years later.
yeah, if physical is bad, then why would Christ redeem it?
That's true.
Why would God would have become bad when he became physical?
And
it's not bad.
Wouldn't salvation then be just to die? And why wouldn't we all just try to die?
Why would he create us? we didn't become physical beings at the fall. We were physical
before.
Beings before the fall.
Yeah.
And so were the animals.
Yeah.
So all of creation is under the curse.
Right.
And not simply mankind.
Yeah.
And that's another thing the creeds are beautiful for, to roll it back into.
Yeah, we're back in Jedi mind tricks.
That's
now.
Okay. Jedi mind tricks. That's why you could call it a mind trick, man. you can get right back into it. I sounded like Jeffrey Lebowski right there, except talking theology. Man, you know, man. This aggression will not stand, man. But anyway, it's a fascinating show, and
it gets you talking about deep stuff.
It's well, I think that's what I was left with the show is I really enjoy a show that is willing to treat a subject and run with it.
Yeah.
And what they did a great job of doing is leaving you wondering if everything that she said was a complete mentally ill. Yeah. The only thing that you're the only
because even the movements didn't save anybody.
Well, here's the
it was the dude
here's
from
the thing. So here's
the
one thing. Here's the one thing that I think you'd have to say is indisputable within the narrative of the show.
Okay.
That she was blind and now she's not.
Yeah. So how do you account for that?
How do you account for that?
And that she escaped. Whatever situation she was in, she was somehow removed.
She
from
was
it.
In some sort of situation.
So there's
something. So what they have the green light or the ability to do green light, they have the option to do with the second season is completely reinvent the narrative around those two realities and give you a completely different story.
Yeah, they could.
Where it's no longer about
somewhere
angels.
In between, maybe.
Right. Yeah. So,
man,
fascinating.
That show's been sticking with me, and I like shows that
it's
do that.
It's a good one.
All right, you want to talk some books for a little bit?
Sure.
If we
sure.
got time?
Yeah, we got time.
All right. You mentioned To Kill a Mockingbird. You just finished that again?
Yeah.
I'm reading that with my classes for the umpteenth time,
and
it never gets old.
It's a fascinating book because...
it's so timely.
It is, and this is what I want to say about the characters in it. That they are all flawed except for Atticus Finch, and which makes him which makes all the other characters to me. So here's what's funny: I'm at a place in my life where I know that he's the hero. He's the standard of the story.
Even looks like Clark Kent.
But I'm at a place in my life where these other characters are so much more interesting to me.
Totally.
Than he is.
That's funny because in the original draft of the play, which has been repackaged as some type of weird sequel, Atticus was not flawless.
He's a racist. He's very flawed. This is the Watchmen.
Go set a Watchmen.
Set a Watchmen, which is Harper Lee, who is dead now.
Yeah.
Is this posthumously that this version came out?
It came out the year she died, right before she died.
Okay, so she knew about it.
That's the controversy. Did she really know what she was agreeing to, et cetera?
Have you read it?
I've read parts. It to me it reads like a manuscript that wasn't finished. That turned into To Kill a Mockingbird. So it's a good exercise in seeing how a story can change.
I don't know this to be the case, but as far as Harper Lee goes, this is her main, if not only.
After To Kill a Mockingbird, she didn't release anything else. And she was always kind of standoffish in interviews. She was asked to do a...
That's mysterious to me. That is extremely mysterious to me how someone...
Well, there's conspiracy theories around it.
Well, there should be.
Some people say,
did she really write it?
Did she really write it? Because her childhood friend was in Cold Blood who wrote that.
Oh, you got me.
I'm blanking his name. Anyways, another author was her childhood friend who she based Dill on. So some people try to say that he actually wrote it and yada, yada, yada. But the styles are totally different.
Right. I'm not saying she didn't write it.
No.
I'm saying it's suspect to me that
she wouldn't keep writing,
and it's her option. But and maybe she did keep writing, and it's such an impossible.
There are those that believe there's other manuscripts out there
that she couldn't top it. So she was never
totally.
Happy with anything that she put
well,
out.
Well, when she was asked to do a new introduction to the book for a new version of it, she basically wrote, "There's no point to introductions. here you go.
Yeah.
So she, I think that was it.
So as a guy who knows quite a bit about the book and who teaches about the book, what would you say to you after having gone through it so many times?
Yeah.
Is the most interesting character or the turn that you didn't see coming, kind of a thing? Because there's some pretty predictable stuff.
There's predictable stuff.
That goes down.
It follows a lot of the Gothic kind of tradition. It's Southern Gothic, so you know you got your typical monster, yada yada yada. Now it takes turns. The monster isn't a monster. It's a nice weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
I like Boo Radley. I think it's an interesting character. You don't get to see as much as I'd like to of him. It's easy to understand Scout, you know, cause you're seeing it from her point of view the whole time.
She's obviously brilliantly written.
Yeah.
Because of her observation is so spot on to me for a child of that age.
Yeah.
The way that she would see things.
Yeah.
Except that she's maybe a little bit, she's really bright for her, like she's observant and bright for her age, but there are kids that are, kids like that. So.
But character-wise, one that I've always, you know, Atticus is like that hero. And what's funny is every year the kids in my classes, at least, find what they think are flaws in Atticus. It's almost like a challenge to them to try to be like, well, you know, oh, he's kind of an absent dad. He's kind of this, he's kind of that. And I don't think it holds up too much. He's almost written two. That's what he's supposed to be, because in the Gothic novel, you have the hero. You have the knight in shining armor, and that's what he is.
He's the father from Leave It to Beaver. Who never makes a mistake, never loses his temper, never gets it wrong, always makes the right call.
Oh yeah.
But there's
so many other characters that it's way more populated than you would think watching the movie.
It is. It's neighbors a long and story the... without taking a long time to read.
A
lot happens. A lot happens. I found who I thought was a minor character until the end, and then I realized this guy is the unsung hero of the book, is the sheriff.
Heck Tate.
Yeah. So he spares by basically concocting the story that the guy fell on it, that Yule fell on his own knife. He spares Boo Radley.
Because he's the Mockingbird.
He's the Mockingbird, and so it's the sheriff who sees all these angles.
Yeah, and Atticus isn't seen it at all. He's formulating the case.
If there's a flaw with Atticus, is he's as innocent as a dove, but he's not as wise as a serpent.
No, he's not.
And the sheriff is
And he probably could have gotten Tom Robinson off if he was.
Okay,
and that's his
that's
flaw.
Right. Yeah,
that's his flaw. He doesn't play the system the way it needs to be played.
Have you noticed? Let me ask you this. This is fascinating because this is nitty gritty. This is down into the
geeky To Kill a Mockingbird
weeds
stuff.
With Kill a Mockingbird. There is something that I heard in the trial this time that I was like, "Why don't you say that? Why don't you bring that up with the jury?" So the dad. His testimony is he saw it all from the window and he saw Tom doing what he was doing and he ran out and so he knew exactly what was going on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the girl, what's her name? Yule.
Mayella
Yule. Yeah. You know all her names. You taught it so many times. Her testimony is that, she looks up and she sees her dad and he says, "Who did this?"
Right. Why?
So you have major contradictory testimony and Atticus never brings it up.
It's funny you pick that up because as an exercise with my students, we do a mock trial where I make them be defense and jury and prosecution and use the evidence from the book.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, if I got a good prosecutor or a defense lawyer, they do that. They pick that up.
They say they pick up the contradiction.
They
both can't be true. So one of their testimonies is false.
And they keep pushing the witnesses.
And he never brings it up in the defense of Tom.
Yeah.
So he's not really even that good of a lawyer. He's a good man.
If you think about it,
he's a moral man.
His first case ever he had were the two son of witches that had it coming.
Oh, yeah.
Who got hung?
Yeah.
He couldn't even keep two dudes.
An explicit rating on.
Hey, it's from To Kill a Mockingbird. Imagine me in front of eighth graders quoting that line over and over again. Right. It happens, but he's not the best lawyer.
No, he's not a good lawyer at all, in my opinion. Yeah. He missed the whole deal.
But if he was and Tom Robinson got off, he wouldn't have the novel.
That's right. Yeah. Well, he's not. He's a hardworking, good man, but he's not a good lawyer.
No,
he's not a good defense
attorney.
And
the weird thing is,
he's not extremely intelligent either, because it takes Heck Tate to come in and give him the angle. Hey, man, this is the deal here.
Yeah.
If we do the moral thing you're talking about doing,
that's one of my favorite parts in the book.
Well, maybe now I'm talking myself into that he is a little bit more interesting, Atticus, because he's actually not a great lawyer.
Yeah.
And he's not terribly smart, but he's extremely moral.
Yeah.
And there's something he said.
Which is, in a weird way, his downfall. But if you're going to have a downfall,
That's a heck of a one to have. Yeah.
Which is what I told some.
That's a hill to die on. Yeah. That's a hill to die on. Yeah.
And it will cost you.
Yeah.
It will cost you.
Yeah. Yeah. And people will come after you.
No politician wins on truth.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's all we have time for.
Yeah, we'll talk some more books next week.
We'll get back into some other crazy stuff. And I've got a documentary I want to talk to you about, a Netflix documentary that we'll get into. But that's it for this week on the God Geeks Podcast.
God Geeks.